Why is it important to have a diverse team? And why is it harder for women to break through in sports? Hi, and welcome to a new episode with SportViews Podcast. I'm Jacob Wickenstall, the host of the SportViews Podcast. Today, we have an international guest, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Marisa Reach. She is an expert in sports marketing and communications with a focus on culture change and diversity. We will talk about her athletic career without role models, how Marisa became an agent, and then became an expert in marketing and communications. And we will also talk about sports dilemmas with the lack of equality. So let me introduce you to Marisa Reach. She was born and raised in the capital city of Germany, Berlin. She grew up in the sports world by being a javelin thrower, and she loves hockey. When it comes to education, she holds a major in economics and a minor in sport management, as well as several certificates in the area of positive psychology, mindfulness, and leadership. Her working career in sports is impressive, with previous roles that include head of events and culture at Infront, managing international communications for the Red Bull's Wings for Life Run, World Run, and the Berlin Marathon, as well as a sports agent for elite athletes in track and field. Today, she lives in Switzerland and is the chair of the She Sports Switzerland, a non-profit association connecting, leveraging, and empowering women in sport business. She is also a commission member at the Global Esports Federation and a board member at Swiss Cycling Team. Last but not least, values and culture are closest to her heart, with a strong belief in the power of cultural positive leadership, diversity, and winning as a team. Super welcome to the SportViews Podcast, Marisa Reach.
Thanks a lot, Jakob. Happy to be here.
Well, happy to have you here in this virtual space that we are living in during this pandemic. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation, and I hope I did quite okay with the introduction, and please let me know if there's any correction.
No, it sounds all good. It's always great to hear actually somebody else summarizing what I did. So I think it's always great to hear a little bit and to reflect, because I think sometimes it gives you time to, you know, look over your own career path so far. And then you're like, okay, it's been a while I'm in the business, and I did a couple of things, seen a lot of things. So, it was very good.
Cool. Well, there will be tons of things we'll go through, even though I know that we probably need more time than that. But we'll try to make it as best as possible for all the listeners as well. But usually I start with the question of if you remember the first memory in sports, and that could be, you know, whatever it comes up in your head. And let's start with that question with you as well.
I think I have, I would say, two memories. I started athletics with 5 years old, so quite early. Stick to it, almost my whole life. So one of the first memories I have from a sporting event is the ESTAF, which is one of the largest athletics meetings, one-day athletics meetings in the world, in the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. And I remember it was back at that time always on a Tuesday or Wednesday evening or night. So I remember with my parents sitting in a full stadium, and whoever have been to the Berlin Olympic Stadium knows that special atmosphere, the sound, it's really rumbling when everybody's shouting. And I remember that I can't quite tell which event it was, but I remember like the likes of Sergei Bubka, Paul Walter was competing at that time, Dieter Baumann, German distance runner. And I just remember that feeling of, you know, that sound of enthusiastic fans shouting and cheering on the athletes. And then in the end, there was always a big firework in the end. So I think this is my first memory, and I think I must have been, yeah, between 6 and 10. I can't really tell, but ever since the Berlin Olympic Stadium is my favorite place, and I was lucky to we had a world championships there in 2009 in Berlin with great events, and so it's always nice to be back at the Olympic Stadium for watching athletics.
For sure. And yeah, now when you're explaining like the feeling and you know, every one of us that are listening now and like trying to experience it in our heads, I think, you know, it mixed up feelings considering the pandemic we are living in still today. But absolutely. But yeah, I guess I can just imagining the joy and just being part of it.
And I think that will be the great thing. I mean, once, yeah, in Australia, it was just possible to be in a full stadium again. And I saw like little snippets, I think, on Twitter. And I just tried to imagine just that feeling. You know, it doesn't matter what you're watching. I think it's just that feeling of combined enthusiasm, the power of, you know, when bodies come together, the energy in it. It's so special, and I think that's what we all just craving for, you know, just to be back with other people, you know, feeling the warmth of other bodies next to us, feeling the sound, getting chills from the sound when everybody's shouting. So that's, I think, what we all just hope. Well, I don't see it this year. I hope next year, maybe 23, but whenever it's the time, it will be so relieving and so good.
Yeah, for sure. And we just had a conversation before we start recording with mentioning that the Melbourne Cricket Ground in Australia had 78,000 people in the audience this last week in here in the end of April. So, yeah, it was a strange situation for us living in Europe, and still pretty cautious when it comes to the men's football Euro championship here coming in with several arenas around in Europe. Gonna host at least, I guess, 20,000, something about that. But yeah, still far from the maximum. And who knows, maybe the Olympics 2024 will be the big event again.
Yeah, let's see. I think, we all try to make predictions, and I think nature is very powerful, and I think we should value that we have nature, but also don't put things on the line. I think sometimes we all want to go back, and for the business it's very important, but health, I think, is the most important asset we all have. So let's not gamble too much with it. And then the merrier it will be once we are really able to go back in a safe environment.
Yeah, for sure.
But 24, yeah, I'm well, hopeful, pretty sure, hopeful, yeah. that we will have fantastic Olympic Games also in Paris.
Yeah. Yeah, just cross our fingers and hope it will be earlier than that. But you know, I have like one question when it comes to your start of your own athletic career, because you did have an athletic career before you entering more of the side of the court or pitch, whatever we would say. And you have told me before that you were having some challenge, if we could say like that, when it comes to hammer throwing and javelin thrower. Could you tell the audience a little bit of the challenges between them, because to help a little bit in the way I want to talk a little bit about role models, so I think you can understand a little bit of why was there a change for you back then between the sports with hammer throwing and javelin thrower.
Yeah. So I was a pretty good, you know, in the youth, you start with ball throwing. So I was pretty good at it, bone champion. And so, and then comes the time where you have to decide, you know, on which throwing event do you want to pursue. So, so there are four. It's shot put, it's discus, it's javelin, and then at that time, it started to have also women's hammer throw. So for shot put, I'm too small. For discus, I'm too small. So that was out almost immediately. I did do a little bit discus, but I'm not tall enough for that. So it left me with javelin throw and hammer throw. And hammer, it was a new event at that time. So like I didn't know really any female hammer thrower. So, and this is also what I only realized afterwards, that probably this was also what hold me off pursuing that. Yeah, I mean, we had a very successful, she's the same age as I am, German hammer thrower then later, which was Betty Heidler. And I think if I would have known her really at that time, then maybe I would have pursued it. But I've never had that, you know, person to look up to and to then maybe say, hey, you know what she can do, I can do as well. So, and with javelin, I actually had that. So I was a huge fan of Trine Hattestad, a Norwegian javelin thrower. And as I mentioned earlier, like I grew up in a sports club, which also organized the ESTAF, the athletics meeting in the Olympic Stadium. So I was always, you know, helping and volunteering there. And obviously you're then also more connected to the whole sports environment, to the athletes, etc. And yeah, Trine was for me my role model. I wanted to be like Trine, you know, with her long blonde hair, really powerful, and yet so such just a nice person, you know, when I saw her off the track and in the hotel. And so, yes, so that's how I became or was more prone to try out javelin and really liked it. Did it then until I was about 18, but then I had to stop due to an injury, back injury, which so before I actually had an athletics career, it was already over. But I think my passion for the sport was so intense that I actually pursued it further. So I did a coach license, coached a couple of years during my high school years, the last high school years. But then also realized that coaching is not my type of thing, that there are better coaches out there. I always coached the children. And as people know who are in that scene, children need play. Yeah, and it's very important that they play. And I think I was always more the competition side of things. And then I think it's good to say, you know what, others are better than me at this. So I actually dived into a different field, which was then, which also became my first occupation, so to say, in sports, was the agent side.
Yeah. We're gonna talk a little bit more about it. I just want to get back a little bit when it comes to the hammer throwing and role models, because as you say, you had a role model with the javelin throwing part of it. But I'm also curious, and I think for everyone that is listening as well, what year do we talk about when it comes to, at this point when hammer throwing was actually approved for females as well? Because I think that's also easy to forget today that for me, it's a classical sport today. But then, you know, earlier then, you know, it was only for men to do it. And, you know, how did you even know about it? How did the club that you participated in, they just mentioned for you at 1 year that, hey, now you can also choose this? Or, you know, how did you What was the experience for you?
Well, I think when you grew up, I have to say athletics luckily was always more inclusive than other sports. Yeah, so it, yes, it's true that a lot of events were added over the years for women. Like 3,000 meter steeple, for example, was also a long time not possible for women. But looking back in the history, I think athletics was not always equal. Yeah, it's still, I think, not entirely equal, although they really do a good job at World Athletics, formerly IAAF. But I think that is really also important. You know, I'm also writing a little bit about those kind of things, and I think it is important to look at the history of the sport, also to understand how or why the topic of diversity is so important that we actively work on it and not just let it happen, because you know, sport in general is made for men. Women were never part of it. Yeah, so it was a thing where men would go after work, especially when you look at the European system, and women were just not part of it because women, you know, had a household chores, had children. So more the aristocratic women were then allowed to slowly, you know, go into sports, try out golf and things like that. But it was always the more educated and higher level population which was allowed to. And then it started to, you know, become more common that also other women or clubs would open up for women, but first also separated. So it's a really, really interesting topic actually to look a little bit back in history. And we're not talking about like 300 years ago. No, we're talking like 125 years ago. So it's not that long ago that women were not allowed to do sports. Or to participate in sports and hell no, compete in sports. And I think that is important. But then obviously, like when you're so into that, into your sport, and for me it was athletics, then you know things and you hear things. And so I heard about that hammer throw was allowed for women, definitely from my coaches, you know, and from, you know, talking, and you were always looking, and back at the time, I mean, we didn't have mobile phones at that time, but we, of course you had magazines and, you know, statistic books and, well, all champion, world championships, European championships you watched on TV, so you heard a lot of things that on those channels, but it was definitely something somebody else brought to me and told me, like, hey, why don't you think about it? But then I said, like, I couldn't imagine me doing it, and maybe I was also not daring enough or bold enough or wanted to try enough, I don't know. Actually, I need to ask Betty at one point. I never asked her actually how she, like, why she decided to go for that, because I think that's also very, very interesting to understand how those, you know, first movers, so to say, came into the decision, or what decision they took to actually dare it and say, you know what, I'll go for it, and I want to be the first. Whatever, hammer thrower, champion, and yeah. So I think it's a very interesting topic, and but I have to say, at that time, and even the next 15 years probably, I've never seen it that way. It's only, I think, the past couple of years where I realized, hey, maybe we have to go back in the history books also a little bit to understand the whole problem, and that it's not all women didn't want to, or you didn't engage enough. That's often what I also often hear. No, it was simply not allowed, and we were made to stay out of the game.
Yeah, and I think it's important here to listen what you're saying, because you do mention that there were magazines and you could watch on television and so on from the games and so on. But you also mentioned with the telephones, or as we might say today, the smartphones, that I it would be interesting to see how that would look like back then if we would have the technology we do have today, and to see that perhaps you would have seen so much more and a lot of more videos from YouTube and so on. Being a kid, and then I can just imagine that, you know, the all the new sports that would come up back then would probably become more accessible for everyone, and you could see inspirations, videos, and so on. I'm just, you know, we will never know, but it would be so interesting to see how that would affect back then. But also, as you were mentioning, like, it's very hard to see yourself in someone else's shoes if, you know, this someone else is not the same gender, for example. I just know from a lot of discussions in Sweden when it comes to equality and having the same rights as a kid growing up and playing sports, and it's very hard for women, for example, in many sports to live on that profession, for example. And just recently, last year, there was more awareness, for example, with a women referee in football, because she had a game in the next highest division in the men's football, and you know, that was like the first woman to do that. So, and she do refereeing in the Women's Champions League and so on. But on the men's side of it, then it's like, yeah, she was the first being in the next highest level.
And it's crazy. I mean, you know, there is no difference. It's the same for coaching. I mean, there is no valid reason why women would not be able to coach a men's team. There is none. You know, because for men, it's normal to coach women teams. But then on the other side, and I mean, I have friends in that sphere also, and the unconscious comments people make or assumptions is, it's a nightmare, because, you know, like, I have a good friend, and she is a former hockey player, really well known, very good, and she works in a men's team, and she was told that she doesn't have or she does not have enough experience, and I just go like, what the hell? I mean, she played at Olympic Games and World Championships and so forth. What experience does she not have? I mean, she has. And also, I think you don't need to necessarily be a player yourself to be a good coach. You know, you need to understand the motion of things, you know, the signs of the body, the tactics, etc. But it's so often that people assume women can't do something because they have not seen it, because they don't put enough, maybe also creativity for their own selves, you know, into their minds to be open-minded. And I think this is, yeah, the hardest battle we're also fighting, you know. It's that unconscious, the underlying assumptions in your in how you grew up, that you can't see it. You know, if you make if you ask kids to draw different jobs, until a certain age they draw both men and women, but then I think it starts at the age of 6 already, that they start to, you know, a pilot is always male, a doctor is always male, etc. And this is dangerous, actually, you know, for, I think, for a whole society. So how do we create awareness. And you talked about, okay, how would have it been for me if I would have seen maybe more female hammer throwers back at the time. Yes, now we have mobile technology and we see a lot. And still, you know, just around 4% of sports footage we see is about women's sport. So, and this is again not something, you know, I would say somebody is responsible for it, but we all are responsible for it. You know, wherever you work, you need to make sure that you display a fair amount of men and female sports. Yeah. And I think that is important because, yes, we all want to have role models. And as you have your role models, and I'm pretty sure they're never really female, they're always male because it's natural. Yeah. Women should also have the option to have enough role models in their life to say, hey, I want to be like her. And that's, I think, the whole discussion we're in right now. You know, how are we able to show that? And I think social media helps a lot. Yeah, because women's sport is much more effective on social channels. But it's also a necessity for them to go there because there is no option for them to be broadcasted on a regular basis. Yeah, because it's not enough money involved that actually, you know, broadcasters would pay for it. It's because, but then it's a vicious cycle. You know, I mean, only when it's on TV, it's interesting for sponsors, and only if there is a proper plan in place for fans to engage also, you know, or to attract fans. So where do you start? In the end, you need to start everywhere at the same time. Yeah, so the clubs need to really put the resources in, put the money up front probably in. The sponsors need to realize, hey, if we're able to, you know, put more efforts in there, we will also get something out of it, and the media and the broadcast units should have, like, should look at themselves and say, you know what, we are responsible also for that, and do it and just go in there and make it a success, you know, not just wait for the success to jump on the bandwagon there, but be the driver of success.
Do you think that's the biggest challenge right now, that in, you know, in general, there's unfortunately too few organizations or media organizations and sponsors that don't dare to take the first steps themselves and waiting for someone else to make the biggest effort for everyone else?
Well, I think, you know, everybody is, it's an economic game, yeah. So everybody has to make revenues. Everybody has to show their superiors that they made the right decision. That in the end, the bottom line is showing like numbers. You know that, yeah, you made something of it. But they don't see that innovation and development needs upfront investment. And I think that is also what we need more in women's sport. You need to trust. And I mean, half of the world's population is female. So I'm pretty sure if you do the math that you would be able to have enough fans or as much fans as the men's sport. If you're able to engage them in the right way, they want to be engaged with. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know where I read it last time, but I just read recently that they had a women's game somewhere, and they were looking at the, I think it was at the report from Two Circles, which just came out in Great Britain about female sport, that it's worth $1 billion by 2030. I think they measured also the consumption of coffee at a game, that it was much higher in a women's game than beer, for example. But this is again like totally normal. Like, you know, I'm a woman, I have certain desires and traits. Like I don't like french fries and I don't like bratwurst all the time, you know. And so when I go to a stadium, I want to have alternatives. if you don't give it to me, I just don't buy bratwurst. That's it. You know, you don't make me to spend more by limiting the offering. But if you serve my needs, you know, same for when I take my, I have a child, a daughter, when I take her to, and we were usually going to hockey games in Berlin, you know, to the Eisbären Berlin games. And when I would take her there, I was always craving for a healthy food option, you know, and it doesn't need to be bio food or whatever. It just, you know, there needs to be an alternative to French fries, tacos, popcorn, and bratwurst. There must be, please, you know. And if there would be, maybe more people, more families would also decide, hey, you know what, when we go there, I don't have that constant discussion about, I want to have French fries. Because you also want your child to grow up in a healthy manner. Yeah, and sport should support that. And it's also fine to have a glass of beer or a glass of wine or so at a game. But I think the alternatives needs to be there. And I think this is the challenging part when it comes to women's sport or women spectators, that you just need to serve them other needs. And so far it was quite easy because you had a very homogeneous group you needed to serve. And there were, and no offense here, but easily satisfied, you know, give them beer, bratwurst, and that's it. And they're happy. And women maybe are more complex, yeah, than that. And they want to have a wider variety of things. But then also society, I think, changed a lot. So the boomers, who were traditionally the ones who went to football games, they become older. We have a new generation coming in. They are not, and I mean, we see that they are not so much of a live attendee, easy to convince consumer cohort than the boomers were, you know, because they have much more, they have a bigger variety of things they can do, you know, and we just take esports, mobile gaming, whatever it is, you know, they don't need to be served in just one way, and they are very careful also with their time, because we know time is not money, but time is life. Yeah, and life is, yeah, the only thing we have here. And boomers, I think, were more driven by money. I think the next generations, I think it starts with us, but then definitely when I see my daughter's age or their generation, they are more driven, I think, by a different kind of purpose. So what is the USP you're selling at sport events for them and not for the traditional spectators, which are mostly the boomers?
Vi gör säsong 2 i samarbete med Sportjournalisten, jobbplattformen som bara är för idrotten. Hitta ditt drömjobb eller din drömkandidat redan idag genom att besöka sportidealisten.se. Yeah, I think this is very interesting because it makes me think about most sports clubs, no matter we're talking about actual events, you know, games, but also in general with the communication, what we do share on social media or websites and talking with sponsors, that we probably make it too easy for ourselves because we can still reach out to the homogenic genre or fans because we have always done that and that's quite easy. However, mm-hmm. we might not be ready to take the opportunity for reaching out to the other half of the population in the world. And I think that's a little bit what you're talking about as well, that why not adding the extra alternative to make a good offer for food or snacks for the other part of the fans that could be there as well. It also mm-hmm. makes me think about Forest Green Rovers in the UK, a football club that is more or less being produced and also are living a vegan life. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's more or less a full sustainable club because I don't know how much you know about it, and for those that are listening as well, but more or less the clubs, you know, they use the rain to take care of the pitch and water the pitch. They have it with the grass. It's also, they take care of sunshine from on with solar panels. All the alternatives to buy it with the food is vegan based and so on. It's quite interesting case to look at in the perspectives of knowing your fans and setting up your USP, as you mentioned as well. And I think that's one way to look at it, but then also looking at women and men with the complex target groups that we do have, do we actually tap into the potential here? Or it seems like we're still far away from it, but maybe looking around and asking, what do you want to have on in with, you know, with food on the stadium, or what would you prefer with the interviews we do, or who should we talk with, and so on?
Exactly, and I think it's also the projection. You know, it's not only about who do we serve right now, who's the fan now, but where do we want to go? You know, and I think it's sports in general. The future look is something which is often forgotten, because you're kind of like in that hamster wheel, you know, like from season to season, and you don't have really time to, you know, get a step back and say, okay, you know, what do we want to achieve in 10, 15, 20 years? Because sport is a, compared to other businesses, it's a never ending product cycle. You know, other businesses, I mean, iPhone, at one point, we won't have them anymore. We won't, you know, because it needs to always develop. And maybe at some point, it looks totally different. I mean, nowadays, we can't imagine that. But for a long time, we had phones with strings attached, and nobody could ever imagine that there will be a mobile version of that. So, but with sports, it's always there, you know, and it either, well, maybe there is a bigger disruption than just COVID, you know, at one point where it's becomes maybe redundant because we're not able to be amongst other people anymore. I don't know. We all hope not. But that's the problem of thinking. We're talking about an indefinite product line, and that needs to be served no matter what. But society is changing constantly. And more rapidly also with the globalization and communication and innovations we have. But we're still thinking in those 4-year cycles, you know, like all presidents and CEOs and whatever, they just, you know, they do forecasts for 5 years, but they never do a forecast for 20 years and then break it down to, okay, in 20 years, we want to be there. What do we have to do now and tomorrow and next year in order to get there? You know, those stepping stones, those things are missing. And it's always that reactive state we are in, that, oh my gosh, we don't have enough fans. Oh, this Black Lives Matter pops up now. What do we do now? Or Me Too. Oh, now we have to work on it. No, it's like, hey, sport, we are driven by values. You know, that's what I really love about the sports business, or like that's why I love to also see all kids engaging in sports, because you learn certain things from it which are necessary to have in life. And there's almost no other way to learn, you know, how to deal with failure, how to deal with success, to trust somebody who coaches you, to be supportive to your team, those kind of things, you know, to not cheat. But then on the business side, we're not living to those standards and values. And I think this is also why recent years I turned more towards that, you know, cultural side and value-driven side and, yeah, equality, because it makes me just sad to see that the sport is often used for something which is, I think, not correct, and it shouldn't be the right way to go forward. Yeah. So it's a very complex environment and with a lot of, and I mean, you just also mentioned it, maybe a little stubborn behavior, you know, we did it this way a long time, we earned a lot of money with it, we had success, why should we change? It's a, you know, and I think brand C, they have a different a different threat, because they have the end consumer who is either buying the product or not, or buying the service or not. Sports is again a little different, because we sell emotions also, and even, and I mean, you've seen that with the catastrophic topic of the Super League, you know, where I don't want to dive into, I don't think that's a bad concept. I think it's a smart concept, but horrible executed. But there it is, you know, like, we need to look to a more future state. Where do we want to be? And if we want to get money out of it, then yes, we might need to go away from that traditional sports thing. But then, on the other hand, what is football doing? Football is doing the past 25 years nothing else than looking for their own money and how to generate greater money, instead of looking and living by those values.
And you know, you were mentioning here that you just a few years ago started to focus more and more about values, equality, diversity. And you also mentioned early on in the episode here that you were saying, should you focusing on something right now and being strategically about it, or should you just take it you know, on the road, so to say? What would be like, what have you seen in this during these years now, and what would be, you know, what do you see we should go from here? Like, if people here are working in a sports club, small, big, working in a federation and so on, what can we do to start doing today, and yeah, what would be the first steps?
I think an important first step is really to, well, first try to surround yourself with people from a diverse group of people. So it does not only mean gender, but also age, for example, yeah, and backgrounds. And what I always mostly worked in athletics, for example. I'm a big fan of hockey, though. And what I always liked is, you know, take my experience from athletics into the hockey world and vice versa, you know. So maybe also allow, and it's always funny in sports, there's also that notion of, we kept, you know, promoting from the inside instead of maybe taking a new person from the outside. And I think this is, on one hand, of course, it's good to, you know, promote and help develop your own people, but I think a healthy mix of people from the outside and the inside is really important to gain knowledge. And for me, of course, I'm already, like, with athletics, I have a very narrow-minded view, although I did a lot of things in athletics, you know, like, yeah, being an athlete, being an agent, working in comms, marketing for marketing agency in front for Red Bull, for an event like Berlin Marathon, the World Marathon Major. So I know a lot of, you know, puzzle pieces to the puzzle within athletics, and that helps me obviously to look from different dimensions to the sport. And I think this is often lacking when you work with a federation or with a club. So I think, yeah, first try to get a really diverse team together, you know, and having somebody in for 20 years is not always helpful. It can also limit yourself because you're not open enough for change. Yeah, because it's also a normal human trait that if something is comfortable, you want to leave it comfortable, because nobody wants to be challenged. Nobody wants to get out of their comfort zone. Everybody wants to know, kind of like, okay, today I do this and that, and new ideas are not always welcome. So, and you need to make sure that new ideas are heard and respected and worked on and looked at. And I've seen in most of my career step that this is not the case, you know, that new ideas will be challenged to a point where it's not being implemented or looked at. And I think that's dangerous. And that's what we also see now. Suddenly within with COVID, clubs realized, oh my gosh, we have to do so much. We have to invest so much because they didn't invest for like 20, 30 years, you know. And it's not the fault of COVID that they have to do it. No, no, it's the fault of them because it's bad management. Yeah, and I mean, again, Super League, if you look at the bottom line numbers of those clubs, I mean, it's just bad management. I mean, how can you run a club with millions, partly up to billions in debt? How is that possible? I mean, but yeah, well, they made all their money, but it's not sustainable. And then again, we come to that part, you know, it's not a company you just, you know, quit at one point and say, well, I'm done. Goodbye. I go, I do the next product or do the next or open up the next company. No, we're in sports business, which will always be there, you know, and you have the obligation to the fans and to the sports and mostly also to the athletes to run a sustainable business. So I think the whole management side needs to be looked at very, very critical. Yeah. And clubs are usually run by, were set up from volunteers. And it's nice on the one hand, but then, you know, we're so professionalized by now that we need to take that into account. So you need to hire also people who have more knowledge than your people who have been there for 20 years. They have the knowledge about the competition and the system. And this is also very important. But when you mix it, you know, and everybody's open-minded, not just the people who come in with fresh ideas, but also the other side, then you will generate, I think, better outcomes for the future. So I think that would be my number one tip, what we need to look at, you know, to be open-minded enough to allow change, to look at change, I think, trust data, and we don't, I think, have enough data in sports. I mean, yeah, we have data now from social media channels, etc. But really knowing the fan and also knowing, you know, like more future trends, where will society go? What is the shift from Gen Z and Gen Alpha? You know, because we need to look at Gen Alpha now. If we don't look at Gen Alpha now, we will maybe miss out of them, and then they go and play, I don't know, Fortnite and Roblox and and then they're gone because, you know, it's that early adoption, and we have that in brand building. You know, when you grow up with something, you're more prone, you're more connected to that brand. Yeah, whatever your parents had as a car, you usually like better than other cars because you just grew up in a, I don't know, Mercedes or BMW or Volkswagen or Volvo, whatever it is. Yeah, same for which brand you were. Sport apparel brand, you're either a Nike kid or an Adidas kid. Yeah, so and this is it's just behavioral science. It's so simple. So maybe we should also hire more scientists into sports. Maybe that's also the key. I don't know.
No, I tons of things here that pops up in my head, and it feels like this should be another conversation talking more about it. But I think you talking about bringing up good points here of bringing in new perspectives, but most of all making sure everybody is heard and getting some sort of feedback and you know, allowing thoughts go through always, because you never know what pops up. And also critical part of what you're mentioning as well is looking forward and not just looking backwards and just taking one day at a time, because we also need to think of what's coming next.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's tons of stuff here, but we're coming also to an end. So I also want to add in my normal question I usually have for my guest of asking them what they brought as a memorable sports object, because that's a favorite thing for me to ask. And please share for the listeners here what you brought, since they can't see the video here.
I actually brought a bib number from one of my athletes I represented from the Beijing Olympics, where it was David Oliver from the US hurdle sprinter, I represented him since he came the first time to Europe. Met his coach a couple of years before, did some internships there, and then was asked like to represent his athletes, and David was amongst them. And so the whole journey with him of coming first time to Europe into that European track circuit, going to all kinds of meetings, you know, making really competing at the very low level competitions, making his way up, you know, fighting, competing into the Diamond League, or well, back then it was still Golden League, and then eventually making the Olympic team and being at the starting line at the Beijing Olympics, and then eventually taking the bronze medal in the Olympic Games 2008, and so that bib number is very special because it was my my first and actually only medal at the Olympic Games as an agent. So I keep that bib number as a reminder of I think also the hard work you have to put in. You know, success doesn't come suddenly and it's just luck. No, it's a lot of hard work, determination, a lot of groundwork you have to do in order to get to that level and be there. So that is my memorable thing.
He kept the medal and you kept the number.
I kept the bib number, he kept the medal, which is the right way.
But yeah, it must be amazing though, the feeling of seeing the developments and you know, seeing the challenges go through all the training every day, day and night, working hard, and then in the end, you know, ending up on the podium as well. Must be an incredible feeling for him, but as well for you to being there and supporting him during the career.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it's very rewarding, but also very troubling, and I think we all know that, you know, and I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves more probably in business that the it's not a linear upwards facing graph, success and career. It is usually with a lot of downsides, with a lot of, you know, going back, and it's But if you have the goal in mind, and a goal doesn't need to be just position or financial wise, but sometimes also, you know, values driven or whatever, or vision driven. I think I'm more a visionary person. Then, you know, it will come at times, and it's not always easy, but if you keep be true to yourself, if you keep pushing yourself and also allowing to fail, I think that is also very important, because failure is the best lesson I think you can get. It hurts the most and always triggers a lot of questions. But I think once you're over that step, you will outgrow yourself. And I think that is important.
Cool. It's probably a good note to bring on, and it's always good to have a memorable things to have a look at sometime back now and then, and or thinking about, because it brings a lot of joy, a lot of emotions and energy to go through the next steps in your life. And you know, last question before we wrap up here, for those that are listening, either they be young to enter the sports industry in either as a athletic career, but also working in the sports business side of it, so to say. It could also be on a volunteer basis. What would be what would you like to say to them to think of in the beginning, like if you want to take the next step being part of the sports world, what's one of those tips or advice you would like to share?
I would say connect with other people in the sports business. I think that is very important to, you know, also hear their stories, to to just surround yourself with where you want to go. I think that is very important, and that is also why I like, for example, She Sports, where what I'm sharing, you know, that we try to, or we connect not only women but also men in the sports world. And I'm also happy that we have a lot of international people in there who all believe in the power of diversity, and that, you know, it equitable and inclusive sports business is in the end which brings sustainable value to it. And then actually what I never had or never like actively seeked or thought about is really, I think, having a mentor. So, and probably not only one, and not only, you know, very close to you, but really somebody who gives you a really different perspective of things you're going through. Because as said, like career and sport business is not always sunshine and cheering. It's a lot of cloudy storms you have to go through. And to be just able to share your experience with somebody and then get that different view and opinion about it helps, I think, tremendously. And I think that's what I would tell young people: join a network, get in contact with other people in the sports business, and the more diverse that group is, the more you will gain from it. If it's just your colleagues doing the same, then you probably won't get a lot of it, because also the sport business is so broad and so exciting and so interesting to see what other dimension it offers. And then try to get a mentor and, you know, just ask people if you'd like somebody, just reach out to them and say, hey, would you be up for it? And I think that really brings value into your life.
Cool. Great advice. Thanks, Marisa. And, you know, if people would like to connect or follow you, where should they go? Because as you brought up in the end here as well, She Sports Switzerland and all the things that you're involved with, obviously it seems like we have need several talks here to talk more about it, but I guess you can also mention a little bit how people can connect and learn more about those as well.
Yeah. So I think the easiest to connect with me is via LinkedIn, just Marisa Reich. And then obviously, yes. Yeah. If you are working in sports or want to come to the sports world, I'm happy if you have a look at She Sports Switzerland. Maybe also there, it's not just Switzerland, yeah, and we're going to rebrand also soon, but it's a voluntary organization, so we all, you know, work voluntarily on it, so it takes a little more time with things. But we're an international network for everybody. We have people from Sweden, from Finland, from UK, from Switzerland, from Australia, India, Canada. So it's really a great group of people, and also different sports and different occupations. And I think that is what I would people invite to have a look at and to join. And then I said, like, I'm on most actively, I think, on LinkedIn. I mean, I have Twitter, but I think in Europe, Twitter still has a has some time to go. Let's see if they acquire Clubhouse at one point.
True. No, yeah. I will make sure to add those in the show notes, or as some people call it, in the description for the episode here. So wherever you're listening right now, just click on episode and then you find the links and can connect to Marisa immediately, but also check out SheSports Switzerland, which is something for everyone to be part of, even though it's mentioned Switzerland. And that will probably have happen more things in the near future as well. Looks exciting so far. Really great conversation, Marisa. Once again, thanks for that. And it feels like we could probably talk more about all of your story here, and there will be more things to come, but that will be for another time. And with that said, I wish you a great week and future successes and you know, just looking forward to see where you will go next and what will happen.
Thanks a lot, Jakob. Really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it for sure as well. And you know, also thanks for all of you that have listened today. It has been a really great conversation here, as you already hear on my voice, but also I want to share to summarize with the great lessons. And I think from this episode you will probably think of diversity and equality in a new perspective, and just think of how everyone can help. Just listen to people and share that the voices, and make people engage in all the topics. I think that's quite important. And also, role models are key. It could actually shape your future, but also dare to ask people questions, and mentorship is a great way to do it. And that could be enough with just 50 minutes of talking with another person. But yeah, before I leave, would be obviously grateful if you would like to subscribe to the podcast, and also wherever you are, if you still like this, please give it a review. It helps more people like you to listen to as well. And it also helps all of us to connect with the purpose and the mission of engaging in the sports industry. Tons of stuff for next time as well. But if you want to learn more about Marisa, check out the description notes, and feel free to reach out to us podcast as well on Instagram, SportViews Podcast. And that's a wrap for this conversation. Thank you all, and have a wonderful day. Ciao.